So, Chris, when did you first hear yourself sing and say, this feels like me, this feels like what I want to do?
Funny thing this all started back in Florida. My mom would bring the brothers together and sing and go to churches. I was 4 years old, and we had our very first concert. And I remember watching the Canton Spirituals, this gospel quartet group, on television and wanting to be like them. And I was on stage singing one of the songs, and I heard myself sing it and was like, oh my God, this feels good. I feel like I could do this and do this forever and maybe be good at it. And that's the first moment at age four that I realized I wanted to sing forever.
What was the song?
The song was, I come from a poor family. But it's the lingo is Po, so it's P-O instead of P-O-O-R. I come from a Po family.
Sing a little bit of it.
Come from a poor family. It didn't have much, but the Lord's been good to me. Yeah.
So at four, was there a real life resonance though? Were you poor?
At 4 years old, we were extremely poor.
But you probably didn't know you were poor.
No, I knew. Even at 4 years old, I knew. Because all of my friends around me had things that I never had. So maybe the term wasn't poor that I recognized, or less fortunate or whatever, but I just knew something was different between my family and my friends' families. They had things that we could only imagine to have.
So you start singing with your brothers. At four, were you the lead singer of the Blue Brothers?
Yes, sir. At 4 years old, I became the lead singer of the Blue Brothers, and we would travel everywhere, and I'd be the front man.
So you did that for years, though. Did you ever have any frustration? Because probably as you start to sing, you start to get attention.
Absolutely. I always had a dream to be a gospel recording artist, travel the world singing as a quartet lead singer. And the more we sang, like you said, the more attention we received. And so I thought that would eventually translate into a record deal or some more notoriety or recognition. None of the above happened. None of the above happened.
Why didn't it happen?
I really, honestly, I don't know, because I felt like we worked hard. We were good enough. We were young. We could sing. You know, we attracted some girls. That always sold records. But it still wasn't enough.
Were you angry?
I became extremely angry. I became angry at God. I became extremely angry at myself, because I thought we had all of the qualities we needed to be known as a professional group, according to the stigma of the world.
So did you find yourself getting close to the dream and then?
Yeah, we had several moments where record labels and execs would, you know, come and say, and just shoot us the dream, you know, give us empty promises and dangle the carrots, you know, and we would be right there like, yes, our time has come, we're here. Promoters, you know, friends of friends, and they would all come to us and say, hey, man, we have this opportunity, or we know John up the road who's connected to such and such. We're going to link you guys together. We believe in you. But no one ever did anything except talk.
You sing all these years, close but no cigar. At some point, you have to make a decision. Is this just a pipe dream? And are we just going to sing on Sunday afternoon at somebody's program? And we need to be satisfied with that. And maybe that's what God has called us to do. Is it time for us to settle?
Never. There's never a time when it's time to settle.
But did you ever feel like there was a time to settle?
Me personally, I never felt like there was a time to settle, because I always believed in plan A. There was never a plan B. There was only plan A.
Plan A is?
Work hard, be successful. Work hard, get the recognition you need, get paid.
Get ready.
Get ready. Get noticed. Get paid. That was always it. That was always it.
So you guys go along and you end up in Knoxville, Tennessee. How did you end up here?
My parents' relationship became a bit rocky and they decided to kind of part ways. And so we were in Florida, and you know, my mom and dad kept us in church, but they were really faith driven on a lot of things that, you know, they would decide on. And so when it came down to us moving to Knoxville, my mom simply said a prayer. She said, God, I know we need to move. Something needs to change. And I really credit my mom because she was always hungry and passionate for something new. We grew up in a really small town. Everyone knew everyone. A couple red lights, a couple gas stations.
What town was that?
This was Winter Haven, Florida. And we grew up in this really small town, this really small house, poor neighborhood. And a lot of my friends, and I believe my mom's friends and relatives, would all get stuck in this area. But my mom always had this dream, this desire, this thing in her that said, we have to get out of these parameters. We got to get out of this box. There has to be more out there. And I'm just crazy enough to believe it. So I'm going to go see it.
How many siblings do you have?
I have a total of 6 siblings. It's 7 of us in total, and I'm the youngest of all 7 of us, and we all come from the same mom and the same dad.
Call them by name in order.
So, okay, I will start with my oldest brother, PJ, and then it's his name is Ernest, but we call him PJ. Then there's Julius, then Tashika, but we call her Strawberry. Then there's Michael, Ashley, Jonathan, and then myself, Chris.
So you all moved to Knoxville.
We all moved to Knoxville with mom. We gave everything away we had in our home, just gave it away. We packed up, you know, bare essentials in a U-Haul truck, literally moved everything to Knoxville, Tennessee. My brother was, at the time I was 10, so my brother was 18, I believe, and he drove all the way from Florida to Knoxville, and he trailed the U-Haul truck.
And you moved in where?
We moved in with my cousin. Who had a home in a neighborhood called Bexhill. It was about, let's see, all 7 plus mom, 8, and my cousin, her 2 kids, and her husband, so another 4. So 12 of us were living in a, I believe it was a 4-bedroom house. Yeah, all 12 of us living in a 4-bedroom house, 2-bath.
How did your parents splitting up affect you?
I would say it had more of a long-term effect on me than anything, because everyone around me's homes were breaking up. My friends' parents were divorcing, and everybody around me were going through different relationship issues, and everyone had their own struggles. And so when you would see divorce after divorce after divorce, that becomes a part of your way of thinking.
Here it comes.
Here it comes. It's just a matter of time. I'm going to get married, have children, and then I'm going to divorce. And that's just life, because everybody goes through that.
So did that stoke your determination?
To be successful in life?
Yeah.
I don't know, I always saw it as like this separate entity thing. I've always saw it as this separate thing. You know, never anything that music was one lane, and then relationship stuff is just something completely different. I've always learned, even at a young age, to keep them separate.
So you compartmentalize.
I very, very much so compartmentalize.
Do you compartmentalize because that's the way you handle it, or do you compartmentalize because you never wanted anything, including relationships, to get in the way of plan A?
I would say both. Absolutely. I never, especially the latter, I would never want anything to get in the way of my career and my dream, my life, my purpose.
What are you running from?
I'm running from failure. That's what I would say I'm running from.
What are you running to?
I'm running to success.
Defined as?
Defined as wealth, wealth in spirit, wealth in mind, wealth in body, and wealth in the bank account.
What are you running through?
I think I'm running through fear. I'm running through fear.
So you get to Knoxville, you're 10 years old, your brother's 18, you move into relative's house, you got 12 people living in 4 bedrooms, you're on top of each other. I bet you don't feel successful then, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, it was promised to me that we would only be there for a couple months.
And you were there how long?
A little longer. A little longer than a couple months, but eventually we moved out and we began to travel more. We would go different cities and states and different churches and events, and we would sing. And so I felt like we were back on track. We were in a new place, and more people were starting to notice us outside of the small county lines of Polk County, Florida. You know, more people as far north as, at the time, I believe it was Ohio and Chicago, as far east as the Carolinas, and as far west as Las Vegas, people were starting to recognize who the Blue Brothers were. That's when I began to really feel like, I think we have a shot, like a really big shot at making it.
So did you make it?
So what had happened was, we weren't disciplined enough. Even at a young age, we lacked the knowledge of the business and we lacked wisdom. We were integrous, but that wasn't enough. To say we made it in the sense that I desired, we didn't make it.
you've been at it for a long time, and it's not, you get close, but it doesn't happen. You haven't given up on plan A. Your mother has been an inspiration because she's been thinking outside of the box, believing for you, but you're still not there. I met you when you were probably 10 or 11 years old. I saw you guys early on, but you were in college.
Mm-hmm.
You called me.
I did.
Do you recall what happened?
I may need your help on this one. This was a while ago.
So I was starting to work with your brothers.
Yeah.
We had come together, started talking, and you called me and said, I want to move back home so we can really work on this.
I do remember
you were at Tennessee Wesleyan or wherever you
were. Yeah. So I'm at Tennessee Temple University in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm in my third year in school. You know, I changed my major like every year or whatever. But I was, you know, getting my work done. And the Lord just kept tugging at my heart, telling me, I think it's time for you to leave. And I'm like, I don't understand. It's my third year in. If I leave now, I've just wasted 3 years of my life. What was this for? But I knew that God was doing something. He was shifting something with my family. And I knew I had to be there on a more permanent basis, more full time. So I did. I called you and I said, Hal, I really feel like I need to come home, really pursue this thing with my brothers, because I thought even then we were on the cusp, on the brink of yet another major run to make it.
So you call me and I go, well, I want to help you find some employment. I want you to be connected. But I remember saying to you, I want you to be around another level of excellence when it comes to music. Enter Paul Jones.
Yep. You made the phone call, which is crazy. I mean, you want to get something done, you call Halloran Hill, and it happens. Paul Jones is a phenomenal human being. He's a musical genius and icon in my mind. His knowledge of music and of music business is out of this world. Pure guy, genuine guy. And so you called him up. I went down to Cokesbury United Methodist Church within a week, met with Paul Jones. And I started working at Cokesbury Church the following Sunday and was there for 3-4 years.
And everything changed with that relationship.
Absolutely.
It really was important for me that you got experience in the studio. Enter Travis Wyrick.
Yeah. So Travis and I became friends. And funny enough, I met him a while back, but the relationship, the timing, you know, I talked about it today. God's perfect timing and purpose. There's purpose behind everything, I believe. But what I think is just more incredible than anything is the timing of that purpose. And so the timing of it was just impeccable. I run into you, I meet you, enter Paul Jones, enter Travis Wyrick, three of the most influential men in my entire life. You know, out of all the people I've met, three of the most influential men I met within the same year, within one summer. So I began to record with Travis. I would go help him out and do background vocals and just kind of sit up under him in the studio and learn as much as I can. I would go over there just to watch him. I'm not a morning person, but I would wake up at 5:30 a.m. just to go to the gym with Travis so I could be up under his musical wisdom. After that, I'd linger around long enough just to see if he'd allow me to go back to the house so I could watch him record. Record other bands.
Now you got performance experience with somebody who's really, really good, who's very structured. That was my intent in connecting you with Paul Jones. I wanted you to be around somebody who was very creative and very good in the recording setting. So from the stage to the recording studio, you would at least have exposure and experience.
Yeah.
And then we started working on a plan for you and your brothers, and we ended up recording a project together.
Yes.
And it really looked like, okay, now we're up and running. Here we go.
This is it. We got the album, which we've never had. That's like our first ever official album that said Blue Brothers. And you were a part of that. So thank you. Once again, your heart has always been the size of planet Earth. I'll never forget what you did for my family. So again, thank you for that.
But it didn't take off.